The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Oh, yes, welcome to Gotham Undercover. I'm Jeff, X-Force 11.
And I'm John McGrail, a.k.a. The Substitute. And welcome to Gotham Undercover. This is episode number 64 of Gotham Undercover, mm-hmm. and we are part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. You can find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover. We're missing our favorite Karen this week. And
Wow!
Ow! You know it. But happy to substitute in. That's what I do around here. So,
and we're glad to have you. Thanks for filling in on a busy weekend. But we wanted to give y'all the scoop on All Will Be Judged.
Dun, dun, dun. I'll be the soundboard this week.
This episode was written by Ken Woodruff, who's executive co-producer on Gotham. He's done work on Gotham and The Mentalist. And it was directed by John Baring, who did the Executioner ep earlier in the season. And he's done several other episodes of Gotham, along with Arrow and Blue Bloods. So I think they did a fairly good job. It wasn't my favorite episode, but what did you give it in feedback there, John?
So I gave this episode 7 more reasons for viewer discretion being advised.
Yeah, and
heads were rolling, man.
And I gave it 7.5. Lee, shaking my head at you.
SMH.
Yeah.
SMH.
Yeah. So not my favorite of the season. I thought it was, you know, it was one of those, you've got to have some, with a 20-some episode run, you're going to have some that are a little more filler episodes, and I kind of felt like this was a more of a filler episode than some. And we got to see some plot movement, but it was a more of a filler episode in my mind. So,
well, yeah, and I took this down several points for the Lee arc, and I, mm-hmm. and, well, I know we'll get into it, but I came away from it just
Okay, so my story titles are the A story, which is covering a lot of different stories, but is Here Come the Judge, Jury, and Executioner. So, you know, basically the Barnes, Jim, Catherine, all the kind of the owl related there in Gotham storyline. The B storyline, an emotionless homecoming with Bruce and the Shaman. And then Birds of a Feather escape together with Ed and Oswald. So let's do the C story with Ed and Oswald first, because it was a smaller part there. So it basically kind of started off where it left off last episode, you know, really with the two of them.
I'm glad they did that.
So we have, you know, Oswald's only reason for existing is finding revenge on Ed, and you're like, okay, you know, really? that's it. That's what, you know, no mention of anything else. Okay. But so
well, I mean, to be fair, you know, Ed did take away you know, the empire as he saw it, and mm-hmm. he's taken away the mayorship, and, you know, everything that Oswald worked to achieve and manipulate and gain for himself and all that really has been stripped away. So, yeah, I mean, I can see, you know, about the biggest thing on my plate right now is killing your butt.
Yeah, and the two of them, if you think about it, they're fairly close to being even with things that they've lost. But it was very interesting. So you've got them just being these going at each other, and Ed gets frustrated with Oswald for calling him Ed and not the Riddler, and you know, he casually rolls up the paper and shoots Oswald with the trank dot, the dart, and is going to escape when Ed, Oswald bangs on the, you know, with the meal plate to attract the guard, and so Ed loses his key, and so now they're both locked up, and they really have to deal with each other. It's like, okay, we've got to get out, and the only way we can get out is together. And so I kind of like their little rule-making session there.
it was too funny with Oswald. Edward. You know, we talk about how Oswald is a little stunted emotionally, mm-hmm. but, I mean, you could really bring out the inner child with him in this episode in terms of how these two were acting together. It was like a couple of middle schoolers. It was funny,
right?
But yeah. So they give themselves a 6-hour window. Okay, we're going to get ourselves out of here, and we'll give ourselves 6 hours, and then all bets are off. You know, whoever finds the other one, you know, you're dead.
Yeah, and so they come up with a plan of how to escape, and a improvised shiv with the paper and Jell-O, and they take knock one of the guards out and slit the throat of the other, and then. And then they're out, and I love it. They get to the street, and Penguin is screams and just scares off all the homeless people, and he's like, okay, and that was four. But I like this section because
I wonder if that was another call out to Batman Returns. I'm going to go ahead and claim that. Because, when the Penguin in Batman Returns, he's like, I think the word you're looking for is, ah!
Indeed.
Sorry, go ahead. But what you liked about
it? Well, I like the fact of the little argument that they had there, the little check and balance of basically the Riddler saying, Barbara's in charge. We've got the underworld. We've got the mobs. It's just you. And then he really gets checked when Oswald says, you know, hey, I've got this army, basically his army of freaks. But, you know, even without that, I could take it up. So I like that kind of little challenge back and forth in this episode, bringing a little more, not necessarily lightness, but a little more humor to the story. Yeah. So,
yes. So we'll see who ends up, you know, finding whom here after the, I guess it's now 5 hours since after we leave them.
So. Yeah. let's talk about Bruce and the Shaman. Mm-hmm. We're continuing this story. The Shaman is basically bringing Bruce back to Gotham, and again we see the idea that he's having Bruce put away what causes him emotions, and really the symbolism here is with the pearls, and the pearls really representing his parents' death. And that's such an iconic thing to use because of the scenes and all the movies where you see the pearls being, his mom's pearls being scattered and things like that. But the first time he really can't put it away. And so the Shaman, and I'm going to ask you this, the shaman's truth, the shaman's memory that he shows Bruce, do you think that was on the level, or was that just a projection of what he wanted Bruce to see?
Oh, no, totally. Totally a lie. Yeah, and total manipulation, because basically, as we, you know, as we come to the end, we find out that, you know, the shaman just wants Bruce as his, you know, another one of his agents. And we get a little bit more into the storyline about how, you know, now the shaman says that he wants to destroy the court. And so it's like, okay, well, where did that come in? When last week you were, you know, you were talking with Catherine like she was one of your employees. So it, I don't feel on the level with any of this with the shaman or where we are with the court from his angle.
Right. I think that's where, that's what the court does. It's really manipulating to have them be used. And so, but that makes a difference for Bruce, and he sees that and he is able to put those pearls away and lock them in that safe. And we get the reveal that the court has been culling the orphanages for over 200 years and producing talons from those. And the process is you strip away the power and the control by stripping away emotions. And once those are stripped away, they can be molded to do whatever. And so we're left with the idea that now Bruce is basically a talon and is going to be shaped for whatever uses that they decide necessary. And it's going to be interesting to see what's going to break that manipulation and that training. What's, metaphorically speaking, going to break, bust open that safe so he gets those those pearls and those cufflinks back.
Absolutely. When we saw Five for the first time at the end of season two, my immediate thought was, okay, well, the court is creating, or Indian, you know, they're working with Indian Hill to create this clone so that he can take over Wayne Industries. And although that has not happened, I think what we're seeing here is that the shaman wants to basically zombify Bruce so that he can have direct control over Wayne Industries through the real Bruce.
Right.
And so it'd be interesting to see where, you know, where the final chess piece is coming here.
Yeah. And it, like you said, it will be very interesting to see where that comes out and how he is used, how Bruce is used, because kind of playing off of that, it'd be good to go into Wayne Manor. And so you have Selena comes into Wayne Manor and is there to confront Five. And this episode, I enjoyed what you said about viewer discretion being advised, because it seemed like you had to, like, every main character had to be knocked out or hit on the head in this episode, because you have Selena and Five fighting. She manages to, you know, get a stab in there, and she's about to spill the beans. And she gets knocked out, and then Alfred starts talking with Five and finds out that, you know, it's not Bruce. What Selena was saying was true, and then he gets knocked out, and then you have the scene of both of them kind of waking up with the ice packs, and but they're still, you know, Selena is just not there. I mean, she's not willing to really help Alfred out, and Alfred's really frustrated about that.
Oh, absolutely. And there's, I mean, okay, point of advice for all of you single guys out there. You never, ever tell a woman that she's just like her mother, okay? I'm just going to say. And Alfred knew exactly where, what that would do to her. And
just
took that, you know, that word of knife and just dug it in. And I liked it. I was all about me some Alfred putting her in her place.
Well, I think he was trying. I mean, he's trying to break through because she's got this shell and she's got that defense up and she's acting like she doesn't care, and he's trying one tack and that's not working. So he's going to say, okay, you don't like that. I'm going to play the mama card and see if that will snap you out of it, you know, and try to do it. And then not so successful.
Yeah. But I appreciated it. You know, I'm glad somebody finally, you know, shook her up a little bit and said, look, he has never been anything but good to you.
Right.
And now you're going to sit by and, you know, not do anything about it. Well, you know, shame on you, and don't ever come back here. I mean, I was pumping my fist. Go, Alfred.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see where that takes her, the journey that kind of takes her on. Because her motivation to go was to tell Alfred, but really it was to get revenge on Fi. That was her purpose. It wasn't really about Bruce, but it was interesting there.
So Fi has basically gone back to the court, we assume.
I guess
we never saw.
We never saw what happened after he left, but we can kind of assume that he's in one of those court safe houses.
So let's move on to Here Comes the Judge.
Yeah. Jury
and Executioner.
Oh, me. Yeah. So it was, I thought it was really, really interesting because, Jim realizes that he's got to be stealthy. He's not going to be able to get the inside information, but he can track down some info. And he, now that he knows Catherine's last name, he finds, you know, this building that the plans and the blueprints don't jive up. So there's a secret room in there. So that he and Bullock go over there and they find this chamber in there and no owls, but they do find another crystal owl there.
Yes. And I'm glad this went somewhere, because after the first one and it didn't really have a payoff, I was like, eh.
Yeah. So. But I mean, my question is, you look at how heavily guarded that first one was. Now, granted, yes, those two owls may have had different information on them, because
it didn't. Well, but it didn't look like it, though.
Yeah, because, but see, but my whole point is, why do you have one that's guarded, and you've got to go in and sneak in and do the tightrope and the laser grids and all that kind of stuff to get to it? And you've got one that, you know, basically the guys can go flip a breaker and it opens a secret door and da-da-da!
Because that one's your off-site backup. I mean, come on.
I guess.
You don't have to go through all that routine just for the redundant backup. I mean,
right. Well, anyway, so, but the guys get a glimpse of this map, and, but in comes the Executioner.
Oh, Barnes in makeup. You gotta love it.
Yeah, he's wearing the smudged eyeliner makeup, and he's got this axe hand for some odd reason. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if you're a judge, well, I mean, he's the executioner, so I guess you would need a bladed instrument, you know, but, you know, it was just kind of interesting, the kind of the steampunk-esque design on his costume. But, yeah, so he comes in and knocks both the guys out, and the owl gets blown to bits, and so And then Jim, you know, he takes Jim, runs off with Jim, and you know, again, we get this scene, another one of our main characters with an ice pack on his head, Harvey's trying to, you know, get the info, and they find out, you know, that they saw him leave in this truck, and so they're able to kind of track it down that way. But it was interesting, and we see this, you know, Jim gets taken to an abandoned court, and I'm like, okay.
There's a lot of abandoned properties around Gotham.
Property value is not real high in Gotham, but
the old bank.
Yeah, you know. So now, I mean, obviously, Barnes would know, being in law enforcement, he would know where that kind of stuff is, and so Catherine is questioning Jim, and I really liked the fact of her line of questioning of wanting to know who else knows, and she just gives it as a given that Harvey knows about the owls, but she's really trying to get at who else knows, and thankfully Jim does not give up anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I have always really appreciated this series is that the villains are given some really good backstory and writing and things of that nature. And I think what bugged me about the Executioner is that he is basically all camp at this point. And it's like we've gone over to, you know, a much rougher version of a 66 Batman villain.
Yeah.
And I don't think it fits with how they're telling the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Even as intelligent as, you know, Jervis is, and, you know, even as far off the rails as you could get with somebody like Fries, you know, this one to me is just, it's much more cartoonish than the others. And to me, it didn't fit.
Yeah. It feels like what it feels like is they had a villain of the week spot, but they said, well, we need to have some movement with the virus storyline, so we're going to make Barnes's Executioner fit. And yeah, I felt like they shoehorned in. Instead of having another villain, they said, well, we need to make two things work for us. And so I get that the virus is just making him one track, but it just, I think we've gotten used to the such smart villains and such nuanced villains that this virus just turning him wild and just making him this villain just feels cheap compared to looking at some of the other villains. And so
it seems to me that it's also inconsistent in that sometimes Barnes is just like, all he can do is think about who he's going to kill next and so on and so forth. And sometimes it seems like he's making very logical, manipulative decisions about, you know, how to go about it and all that. And there was a moment when Gordon stopped him and said, okay, not without my badge. You know, if I'm going to die,
right,
you know, put my badge on from one soldier to another. And that communicated to Barnes. And he took that in, and he's like, you're right. This needs to be an honorable thing, and so I'm going to put your badge on you.
Mm-hmm.
See, that does not line up with all that we've seen from Barnes with the Tetch virus. It's like, you know, he doesn't, all he's you know, fixated on truth and justice and getting, you know, the people out of the way and so forth. And now he's become this campy tool. And I don't know. I found it to be inconsistent. I found it to be cartoonish, and I couldn't go there with it.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, it did really feel campy. He's up there on the judgment seat. You know, using his arm as a gavel. He's playing judge, jury, executioner. He finds him guilty, like you said, and Jim does ask for the badge, and that that seems more like a breakthrough, like you said, to kind of the old character.
Yeah.
And then, but, you know, Jim turns around and pulls a grenade. And just as we're about to get to see Jim's head chopped off, in comes the Harvey and the GCPD. And out the window, you know, I mean, this virus is amazingly powerful. I mean, granted, he's wearing this suit, but I mean, he's jumping out this second floor window and jumping down and able to walk away, get in the vehicle, drive off or whatever. And it's like, okay. But, you know, it's just anyway. But so let's get past that for a little bit and get back to the GCPD, because Alfred has come for help.
Yes.
And he kind of gives him the scoop. And I love Harvey's like, he's a clone? What? You know, it's just like, I love the fact like he's coming into the GCPD saying, you know, I know this is Gotham, but there's a guy running around with an axe for a hand. Can we not find him? And then he's then hit with, okay, Bruce has been, you know, you've lost Bruce. Isn't that like your job? Oh, that's there's right. A clone?
It's your only job.
There's a clone? I got to sit down. I mean, he's just had a bad day. I mean, he's had this knock on the head and...
And I love the conversation between him and Gordon as they're finding the crystal owl. He's like, could I not have just a little consideration to make things a little easier to find? I mean, he definitely got some good ones in tonight, as he usually does. So
yeah, but we get the info that yes, everybody knows about the owls now. And yeah, I've still got the pieces to that owl that Jerome broke.
Of course.
He knows how much trouble they went through. They're not listening. So he brings back the box, and in the meantime, the strike force has captured Catherine, which is, you know, nice. But so Harvey is trying to get, you know, their sculpture artist to come take a look at the owl to try to put it back together. And he let slip that Jim is questioning Catherine. He's like, uh-oh, watch out.
Sorry, Alfred, wait.
But, you know, Jim's had no luck at it, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
She's not revealing anything. She knows she's, you know, on camera. She's not going to let anything slip. But I love the fact she's like, you think I'm the boss? You know, it's like all one of those things that there's always somebody up higher up the food chain. So, but Alfred comes breaking in and she's like, y'all going to play good cop, bad cop? And he's like, I'm not a cop. I'm a butler. And immediately dabs her in the hand to get answers.
Oh my goodness, that was most uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The horrifying scream she gives is just mm-hmm. It was all a little too real.
I was
feeling it with her. So she still doesn't give up anything.
Mm-mm.
And so I gotta give her credit. So they take her then who shows up again, but you know, they're out, you know, again, Harvey's frustrated because they can't find Barnes, and so he just comes waltzing in, and you know, this used to be like a church to me, and mm-hmm. he just starts leveling everything.
Yeah, you know, he just knockout gas and grenades, and I'm like, man, the budget for municipal repairs is gone.
How many times has that place been trashed?
Yeah, Jerome, you know, it's like everybody is trashing the place. And so Harvey's it's like, we've got to get you and you out of here. And so they're trying to sneak out. Of course, Catherine's calls for the executioner, and uh-oh, bad news. We get knocked down again, not quite out, but, you know, our heroes get knocked down. Alfred gets knocked down, Bullock gets knocked down, Jim gets knocked down, and I love the fact that she is trying to reason with Barnes, and that's not going to happen. I mean, she has played her part in his mind of letting him loose, but he doesn't owe her anything, and he just takes off her head without a blink there. It's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I'd like to remind everybody that this is an 8 p.m. show. And, on Fox. I understand this is probably not something that you're just going to wander into and do like, oh, this looks interesting. And
yeah,
like, you know, I get that at this point, but still, I mean, we saw, you know, the whole, you know, degree of rotation there at the neck, and then the head comes rolling over to Jim, was it? And it was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just a bit much. I mean, it really is. And I'm
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess I see kind of what they were trying to do there with punching up how violent people are with the virus. We'll get to that a little later. But Jim fortunately can grab a shotgun, blows off the axe hand, thank goodness, and once again. Barnes gets captured, but again, you would think, after all this time and what he's done, Alvarez gives us the bad news that he's knocked out the guards and escaped again.
Again.
And you're like, oh my goodness.
Really?
Yeah. But, so they're kind of cleaning up. Figuring out what to do next, they finally, they're dazed there, and Lee comes in, but not for the reason that Jim thinks.
Well, let's okay. So if we're gonna wander into Lee's territory here, let's back up. So earlier in the episode, she has this conversation. With Jervis, goes to see him. Well, no, I'm sorry. Let's back up even further than that. She has the dream.
Yeah.
The dream with Mario, and she tells this whole thing about how, you know, you had the virus and it brought out this jealousy of Jim. And I love his line. He's like, why would I do that? I'm taller than him. I loved it. But he says, you know, just take your medicine and it'll be okay. And he slits his wrist and gives her a wine glass of blood, which she drinks. Now, you know,
it's like some real vampirism thing there going. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I think there comes a point in time for therapy, and I think that's probably.
Yeah, and she wakes up and just throws her wine glass off. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. So to understand a little bit further, she goes to Arkham.
Mm-hmm. Back to Arkham.
And sits down with our resident Mad Hatter. And I loved this conversation because, you know, we know, and I don't know how she took it, but we know he's telling the truth 100%. And, you know, tells her that when you looked at Jim and I knew that, you know, that you were in love, that was when I did what I did with Vicky Vale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, and he puts the blame for all this, not on Jim, but on her.
Yeah. And I thought it was an interesting look into Jervis's character because his goal was to hurt Jim.
Yeah.
But leave him so that he's feeling that because he really kind of feels like that Jim took his sister away from him. Right. And so he wants to take somebody that Jim loves away. And so you get that thought of Jim can't be happy. And so that's why, you know, I forced him to kill the man that you love so that the love that was between you two would turn to hate. And I love how he flipped that back and saying, you know, getting her to question herself. And right. That was this plot movement of she's thinking about that people have to pay for their mistakes. And that really led into what happened next. But once again, with this whole storyline, I'm not seeing her reasoning. I'm seeing that she's being manipulated, but that feels cheap because of who that we've seen her to be in the past.
Exactly. And you are spot on. And I came away from this episode, you know, feeling like, okay, we are witnessing character assassination here.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I mean, you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago when she was in the, you know, when she was in the graveyard and she and mm-hmm. Jim talked and it was like, okay, you've got to come to terms with this. And where we've seen her go in the last couple of episodes has just been down this, you know, rabbit trail of sheer madness. And it's like, there's not a logical motivation for it. There's not, I was completely frustrated. I mean, it's, and I mean, this, all I can think is this has to come to a payoff, you know, here shortly, because, you know, we watched these writers, they're amazing group. They took, you know, a sniveling excuse of a character in Barbara mm-hmm. and turned her into something amazing. And now they're taking Lee and going the very opposite direction.
Yeah,
and it doesn't seem like it has any motivation. It doesn't seem like it ties back to anything that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the reason the part with Barnes was frustrating, but I see what they were trying to do with saying, okay, this is what people with the virus are going to act like, and it's going to be totally different. It's going to be dangerous. And so when you see Lee, we find out that she's come in and she's stolen the virus and she's going to inject herself. And so that puts her in peril because you've seen what it does to people like Barnes.
Right. I mean, so the only logical conclusion at this point is that she has to die. It's like, what? I don't.
Yeah. Well, the only thing that I can think is because the virus is formulated to be airborne now, that Hugo has formulated that virus to be airborne. Therefore, it's got to be able to be spread more easily. Mm-hmm. That she is not, it's not like she injected herself with like pure blood, infected blood. That this is a virus that is meant to be dispersed easily, so maybe it's not quite as concentrated. So that, you know, and maybe there's been movement on a cure, but it's just frustrating. And so,
yeah,
you know, totally. It's frustrating because Jim is trying to talk with her, and all she's thinking is you haven't paid for what you've done wrong. And you're like, he's been paying for what he's done wrong all this season and trying to shield you and let you go and not blame you when you keep accusing. And then she's like, I'm willing to pay the price. And you're like, for what? I mean, yes, you were a pawn in this game, but what really, other than blaming Jim, was your fault? I mean, I just don't know. Yeah.
Well, and the other, and I know we don't need to keep continually bashing on this, but the other thing that really I struggle with in this is that she's got such a love and devotion to Mario that we never saw the build up to why she would be motivated to act this way. We just came into them to their relationship midstream, and we're just supposed to take it that, you know, she has this kind of devotion to him that she's willing to take, you know, this kind of move. And I find it hard to come alongside that, especially when she's been struggling with the relationship with Mario because of her feelings for Jim. We've mm-hmm. seen that. And so it's like, I can't reconcile these two sides for it to make sense of why she would subject herself to this. And she knows what the virus will do. What does she hope to gain out of this? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. And like I said, it's just frustrating when you just see that type of writing that's just okay. I don't understand the end game. And it's frustrating when, like you said, strong characters are sacrificed for plot device, basically. I don't know. Yeah. But that's, you know, so the virus is stolen. She injects herself with a virus and goes all ragey. So we're going to see that in upcoming episodes. And so that's going to play a part looking at the pictures that we've got up on the Facebook group. Jumping a little bit back, the clay artist was able to, I guess, do a mold to reconstruct the owl, and they get the locations of the safe houses and things like that. So we've got at least places to search for the viruses and for Bruce and things like that. So hopefully we'll get some movement there next week. So.
All right, so where's everybody left? Bruce is being manipulated, the last we see of him.
Mm-hmm.
The shaman shows him what kind of allegiance these talons show as he tells the talon to cut off his finger. And he says, "You want to have fun? Let's see. You know, I'll tell him to eat it."
And he'll
"No, really, I'm good."
Yeah.
Thanks, no. All right, so Bruce is there. Alfred, Harvey, and Jim are looking for him, but they don't really know. They don't have a good lead on where to go.
Mm-hmm.
Selena is sitting on the sidelines, hopefully hurting a little bit from that stab that that Alfred gave her, I hope.
Mm.
Oswald and the Riddler are at each other's throats as soon as they figure out their own plan.
Right.
And who are we missing? Lee is who knows where. And, off the rails. So.
And Barnes is in the wind.
Barnes is in the wind. Yep. Yeah. So does that cover everything?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Quite a build up.
Yeah. So now that we've talked about that, let's hear some feedback. All right. And so we got some Facebook and some email feedback this week. And so... I am going to read the Facebook post from Todd, and Todd says, I wasn't much too interested in this one. Bored with the Penguin Riddler stuff already. Glad Alfred knows about Clone Bruce. Yeah, I'm glad he finally knows. He has his suspicions confirmed there. Guess I'm happy that the rich blonde owl lost her head, but now what? Who's really in charge of the court? I think it's a shaman, but we'll see.
I have a feeling it goes even higher than that.
So whether that's Mr. Al Ghul or not, we'll see. But going back, he says, glad they have a new rogue in Barnes as the executioner. But he wasn't very exciting. Yeah, I think there needs to be some motivation there and make a deeper character. But anyway, says
consistency.
Yeah, and Todd goes on to say, don't like them trying to emotionally castrate and brainwash the real Bruce, but we will see what happens. Honestly, the most interesting thing that happened tonight was Lee taking the Tetch virus serum, and now I wonder what she will become. Harley Quinn? Question mark. Maybe, but I would rather see that proto Harley Quinn filled by Barbara, because she seems much more logical. But anyway,
yeah, yeah.
But you know, once again, Lee is a doctor, so that would kind of go into that character. But we'll see. Who is there left to choose from as far as female Batman rogues? I don't know much about the comics, and he says, is next week the finale? No, next week is not the finale. We've got a new episode next week, and then we've got a two-episode finale. So we've got two more weeks of Gotham. He says, hope they end with a bang, not a whimper. Even still, I'm not sure I'm psyched to see season four at this point. Well, I'm like I said, I think this is was more of a filler episode, and I think they're going to get back on point, hopefully, in the next couple episodes. Just looking at the pictures, it definitely looks very interesting, some of the stuff that we've got coming up. But thanks so much, Todd, for your feedback.
Absolutely, Todd. The one thing I wanted to key back in on, because we didn't talk a whole lot about them, but his mention of don't like them trying to emotionally castrate and brainwash the real Bruce, but we'll see what happens. I appreciate you bringing that up, Todd, specifically, because mm-hmm. I think just like you and I talked about several weeks ago, Bruce, you know, we as the character of Batman, we know Bruce has to key back into that pain because that's his motivation.
Right.
So this is a very interesting arc to see what they're doing to Bruce and how he's going to basically reject all of this mm-hmm. and, you know, come back to know that, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, that's what defines me as the protector that Gotham needs. And so
right.
it'll be interesting to see how he, you know, comes back from this shaman's teachings. So thanks for bringing that up, Tom.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's move on to Phoenix. Who has this to say? Wait, there's a citywide APB out on Barnes, and the first thing we hear when he enters GCPD is, who's this guy? Gotham's finest. Love it. Well, after slapping Bullock down twice and Gordon several more times, glad Barnes finally figured out how to properly wield an axe hand. Pretty efficient when it comes right down to it. So.
Yeah, but now he's in the same boat. He's going to have to get an artificial hand. I mean, that was just over his existing hand. Now he's going to be like Butch. He's going to have an artificial hand.
That's right. The utility extensions.
Yeah. Is there a shop in that? You know, Hands Are Us in Gotham.
Well, yeah, he can. I'm sure Strange has some teaching assistants that he can put to work on that. So, thank you, Phoenix.
Yes, indeed. And we got an email from Chris, and says, unfortunately, I deleted my episode notes after I finished watching, but before I could send the email. So I'm going from memory this week. Hey, go for it. I mean, you do pretty good for doing it from memory. So apologies in advance if I misremember anything. So he starts, as an odd bit of non-Gotham trivia, the wrestler named The Executioner was in the very first match of the very first WrestleMania, where he lost to Tito Santana. So, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Chris is a big wrestling guy, and I was a little more in college. But, yeah, so bringing in the knowledge there. So, next point. I like the Executioner's look mainly because he reminded me a whole lot of other characters. If you remember the old Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, The Running Man, he seemed like a little like Dynamo to me. When he held his blade up, it looked a little like the top of an ancient Greek warrior helmet. Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which reminded me of the Wonder Woman villain's Ares, and who I believe is going to be in the movie, so we'll see. And the show and the slow, deliberate way he walked, stomped, reminded me of RoboCop, who also got his hand blown off by a shotgun. Yeah, bringing the death there. The executioner wins. Flawless victory. Fatality. Instead of finish him, it would be finish her. I'm not complaining. I'm more than fine with it, but I can't believe they can get away with some of the violence that they get away with in a prime time on this show. And once again, 8 o'clock, and it's not moving to 9 next season. Even though it's moving days, it's still going to be at 8. But anyway.
I'm glad it's not just me.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, right before Alfred pinned Catherine's hand to the desk, Lucia Brasi style, I thought, it's not a smart idea to mouth off to Alfred like that. He likely cut you. I mean, yeah. He's not one to be trifled with, Mr. Former Special Services. But she probably didn't know that. But anyway, I saw this on Reddit, and I can't remember, but when James shot Mario, did any of the blood splash on Lee?
Yes,
it did splash on Lee, but it did not... She
like
didn't
get in her eye.
Like,
or,
yeah, she yeah, didn't anything. Have any open yep. cuts. And at yep. that point, it had to be direct blood to blood contact or in through like the eyes, what it did with Barnes. So he said that could be an explanation on Lee's behavior either way. Yeah, I think they would have maybe given us a little more hints to that. Because, you know, it seems like that when you get affected that it kicks in. But we'll see. I mean, it did take Barnes a little while to go off. But I don't know. It seems like it's been longer since she's been infected, would have been infected than he did before he started going nuts. But we'll see. He continues, I don't want her to become any form of Harley Quinn. Harley is different than many other Batman villains. She doesn't need a prototype version. We need a fully formed Joker before we can have Harley. Harleen Quinzel was not genetically or chemically altered to become Harley. The Joker does that all by himself using only his mind. Harley doesn't become Harley in stages, so having Lee as a prototype version will water the character down. I sincerely hope that I'm ranting against something that will never cross the readers, the writers' minds. And I agree. That's just a huge character that has its own lore there and deserves, you know, to be treated well. So we'll see if that's how they treat him, but treat the character. But we'll see.
Yeah, good analysis there.
Yeah, definitely. So, Lee won't listen to Jim, Harvey, Lucius, but takes the Mad Hatter's word? What the hell? You know, it's like, from someone that's interesting. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. But I appreciated the Hatter's insight into why he was doing stuff, but still, I mean, Lee, come on. But anyway, back to the email. On the opposite side of the scale from Lee, I love Selena a little bit more each time she's on. And again, this coming from someone who has never been a big Catwoman fan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where she goes. I reiterate the comment that I made on an earlier episode. Sean Pertwee plus script featuring an aging James Bond equals license to print money. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, definitely. And I think it would be cool, but that would mean he would have to go off of Gotham. I would like to see him fill his father's shoes as the Doctor. But that's, you know, that's, I don't want to see him off of Gotham. But anyway, back to Chris's email. I enjoyed the episode quite a bit, but not as much as the previous few. I'm still going to go ahead and give this a 7 out of 10 severed heads. Thank you, Chris. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you, Chris.
Yes, indeed. And so, if you want to be like these good people,
to get your feedback in like these good folks, please get it to us by Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. You can call us at 304-837-2278. Or you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can leave a text file, you can attach an audio file, you can use the provided SpeakPipe widget, or you can simply email us at feedback@goldenspiralmedia.com. Follow the show on Twitter at GothamGSM. And to subscribe or leave your 5-star reviews for this or any other Golden Spiral Media podcast, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. Now, here are your hosts, Karen and Jeff.
All right. So, John, why don't you fill us in on what's happening Monday?
All right. Spoiler alert. Here it comes. On the next episode of Gotham, airing Monday, May 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern, Jim races against the clock to save the city from the Alice Tetch virus, while Lee Tompkins intercepts with a plan of her own. Also, Alfred sees a big chance in Bruce Wayne after his work with the Shaman. Meanwhile, some of Gotham's most endangered villains band together in an all-new Heroes Rise Pretty Hate Machine.
That's right, and we've got pictures up for that and the last two episodes there on the Facebook group. Yes. And we invite y'all to leave your thoughts and feedback there, and definitely leave us a feedback like we gave you earlier. We really appreciate it. We appreciate your thoughts because it makes it a better conversation. But indeed,
absolutely. After this past week of finales busting out everywhere, it's nice to have another three solid hours of Gotham coming up. So looking forward to it.
That's right. Well, we will be back normal time next week. We'll be recording on Thursday night again, and we look forward to hearing from you. And so until next time, keep your TVs tuned. Same bat time, same bat channel. See you, everybody.
Get better, Karen. We'll see you soon.
Yeah.